time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, February 8th. Dancing to the music there. I like that intro music Paul put together. Paul King, who works with us, and Nikki Whitaker, both of them do a great job getting this podcast all organized. So grateful for both of them for making it happen. So shout out to them at the top of the podcast. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're so grateful to have you here joining us each week live as we do this podcast. I know some of you listen on a downloaded basis. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We're just grateful to have you. The biggest reward is having you come back each week and then telling others about the podcast. It means a lot to us. And we get so much feedback. I was talking to Bobby Nicely earlier today of Alcova Mortgage. Great mortgage company. They're kind of like fly under the radar. So I may have popped them up over the radar. But Bobby was saying, hey, I really enjoyed that interview you did with Barry Habib this last week. We slipped in a quick interview with Barry. Always fun to get Barry on the phone. And so go back and listen to that interview. And we hear from so many of you complimenting us on the guests, the quality of the podcast, the quality of the guests, the quality of the information. And we're just thrilled to have the opportunity to get before you. So anyway, in the hot topic today, we have Todd Jordan, Vice President of Strategy, and Justin Bailey, Senior Client Services Manager with Bellamy on the program. We're going to be talking about digital shifts in home buying and the home buying journey and how to position yourself for success. We're going to talk a little bit about how you can get intelligence. So it's really, really good stuff. You'll enjoy this interview. We're excited to have them be a part of the podcast today. Also, we have Industry Syndicate. They do a great job of promoting out a number of great podcasts out on talking about all that's going on. Again, I think we were one of the first podcasts, and so many have followed, and we're so pleased to help and promote them. Also, a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We had Michael Frantoni on January 4th. Go back and listen to that with his economic forecast, the MBAs. While you're there, check out the Mortgage Action Alliance app, MAW. You got to make sure you sign up for that. As well as Finastra, who's a Fusion Mortgage Bot solution, has the ability to set up a custom decisioning parameters to help streamline approval process while keeping your lending team compliant, as well as Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these two co-ops do a collaborative effort of bringing lenders and vendors together in a smaller, more intimate setting, and they do a great job. And one of the things that I get excited about is hearing about the peer analysis that comes out of that. Each of them have their own peer groups where they get together. So meaningful. So I want to figure out what the others are doing and how they're doing it. Get a part of both of these co-ops. Really helpful. Also, Community Mortgage Lenders of America, grateful for them as a sponsor, as well as Indicom. It's a technology firm with mortgage expertise and provides automation and outsourcing and compliance solutions to the mortgage industry. They got some great technology. Also, Incelerate, which is a leading cutting-edge technology that helps mortgage lenders connect in a more meaningful way with borrowers. It creates an enhanced borrower engagement. And Josh Friend does a great job on that. Did an interview back on August 17th. Go back and listen to that. Also, a good friend, Knowledge Coop. You got to go and check out Knowledge Coop website. Knowledge Coop, COOOP. See what Kim Perry and the team do there. Some of the things that they put together for training, it's edutainment, educating you and entertaining you. Great stuff. Mobility RE, as well as Modex. They do a great job of helping you recruit, looking at how to identify the top realtors and LOs in your market. Check out both of these. Also, finally, I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Alan, Matt for their contributions to the podcast each and every week. Anyway, we'll start off with a word from Rob Van Rapphorst with the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA, along with several other trade organizations, submitted a joint letter to the OCC in response to an MPR on the Community Reinvestment Act. The letter commended OCC's efforts to modernize the CRA regulatory framework and strongly urged them to discontinue efforts to establish a valuation framework. It also noted that the MPR's proposed benchmark methodology is fundamentally flawed. Also last week, the House Financial Services Committee held a hearing focused on policy solutions for the next COVID-19 relief legislation. Committee Chairwoman Maxine Waters called for an increase in rental assistance, continued enhanced unemployment insurance benefits, and additional stimulus payments to individuals and families. Republicans on the panel cautioned against policies unrelated to the pandemic and warned that excessive spending in certain areas could thwart economic recovery. The administration and congressional leaders plan to finalize a relief package by mid-March. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Oh yeah, that relief package. Matt's gonna talk a little bit about the potential impact of that in just a minute, but let's get over to Les Parker with his TM Spotlight segment and a macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy. Why can't we be bulls? 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 Do not expect the bulls to threaten the bear trend that began in January. Rates are headed up with the U.S. showing an economic revival and vaccination leadership. The economic consensus that 2021 GDP will exceed 5% feeds the optimism in U.S. stocks. Bonds embrace their killjoy image. By the Treasury moving cash from the Fed to commercial banks, it lifts reserves and feeds the leverage craze. The market sees inflation rising. Mortgage bankers can be bullish on housing, but not bonds. Why can't we stay bulls now? These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Yeah. I'm missing it. Well, let's check out Les Parker's newsletter. You can subscribe and you get the paid version for free. Put in the word power. Good to have you with us. By the way, Matt Graham is founder, CEO of MBS Live with his market update. Man, always so excited to get in and start talking to you about the markets, looking at your graphs, loving your website, mbslive.net. And you get the extra time trying it out if you mention our website, LOL. Anyway, our program. What's going on? I'm really interested in economic data. You were talking earlier before we went live about the Treasury auctions. I'd like to focus a little bit on the importance of those and what can we learn by the strength or the weakness thereof.
Yeah, definitely. Treasury auctions, they're not guaranteed market movers, but they can sort of highlight how traders are feeling about issuance at any given point in time, how they're feeling about trading levels, because we get to see a ratio of the number of dollars bid versus the number of dollars being auctioned. That gives us one way to measure demand. They also arrive at a yield depending on what people bid for the auction. So where that yield is in relation to market expectations gives us another input as to how well received the auction was. And we get to see a breakdown between direct and indirect bidders and between dealers and non-dealers. And it just helps traders get a sense of how other traders are approaching the bond market. And in that sense, it can be sort of a pivotal few days where we often see a reversal or an acceleration of any given trend. But Les really nailed it as far as the rising rate environment. And it's really important for mortgage people to understand that this has been the case since August of 2020. And 10-year yields have been in a very linear, very predictable, even in hindsight, of course, uptrend, moving toward higher yields since then. And that uptrend continues to sort of guide the major highs and lows, the bounces. And mortgage rates just weren't really a part of that for reasons that we've discussed ad nauseum. But in a nutshell, because margins were so wide and had room to tighten, mortgage rates didn't need to rise as quickly as treasuries because they never fell as much in the first place. So that risks a little bit of complacency for your average mortgage person because you might not appreciate just how determined the rising rate trend is as far as treasuries are telling the story. And now we're in a situation where treasuries have moved up and over 1%, and they just swooped back down to 1% at the beginning of last week, well, really the middle of the previous week. But then last week was really the confirmation that we were treating 1% as a floor for now. And that's scary. It's a ratcheting step back toward higher rates. And it's something that the mortgage market will increasingly have to pay attention to. Indeed, when we look at a chart of, say, 10-year yields versus mortgage rates, back in 2020, there were so many examples of the things going in opposite directions. But over the past 3-4 weeks, the movement has been almost perfectly correlated, even though the magnitude of the movement in mortgage rates isn't as extreme as that of treasuries. They're still moving in the same direction. So if 10-year yields continue higher, mortgage rates will likely have to continue to follow, even if it's not at quite the same pace. But higher rates are higher rates, and that's not necessarily great for the average originator, unless you're looking to catch your breath, maybe, then some higher rates could be good in the short term. But what else? Economic data. So last week, we had more data than we're going to have this week, and it could contribute to the weakness a little bit. The reports that came in weaker than expected still had some silver linings, or I should say some bearish linings for the bond market. For instance, ISM's manufacturing PMI, one of the biggest reports month in, month out, it was slightly lower than expected, but over 58, and that's still really decent growth for this economy. Yep. Other thing is that the prices paid components, a component inside that ISM report, was the highest in a long time. I think since 2011, perhaps, but the thing just soared. It's 82.1 versus 77 forecast, and highest in at least a decade, I believe. So that speaks to maybe some underlying inflation pressures mounting at the wholesale level that could eventually trickle down to the consumer level. Not really seeing evidence for that yet, but it's something that could cause some concern. ADP employment, on again, off again, companion, I guess, of non-farm payrolls. ADP tries to predict the ultimate non-farm payrolls number, and it came in much stronger than expected, maybe spooked the bond market a little bit more. The following day, jobless claims missed their forecast, but they still declined. Continued claims still declined, and they beat their forecast. Good news on the labor market front there. Finally, NFP, a super interesting kind of weird one, because it came in right in line with the forecast, and the forecast was quite low. It was for 50,000 new jobs created, and we created 49,000. Big negative revisions to the previous month. At face value, that's a report that is not good for the economy, or that is good for the bond market. And we did get a little bit of improvement after that, a couple bouts of it by 10 a.m., but bonds ultimately sold off into the afternoon. The counterpoints inside the NFP data, inside the jobs report, were as follows. First off, unemployment fell sharply from 6.7 to 6.3%. Now, oftentimes when we see the unemployment rate drop like that, we look at the labor force participation rate right away and can sort of explain it away. Very common analytical go-to there. But the participation rate only declined by 0.1%. So there was an additional 30 basis points of improvement in the unemployment rate that's not accounted for by participation. So economically positive. And why might that be? Well, people are on hold from working because of COVID, and they feel good about going back, and they feel good about not needing to look for a job right now. And most staggering component was the average work week. Dave, do you have a sense of what the average work week is? And I'll give you a hint. It's definitely not over 40 hours because it counts everybody, even part-time.
I'm looking at your screen, 35.0.
35 would be a terrible guess any other time but today, because or last Friday, because that's the highest it's ever been since the Labor Department started recording that. Definitely a new record, and a big one by more than 3/10 of a point. So that thing historically runs about 34.4 to 34.5 hours. We've occasionally seen it tick up to 34.6, but really those were anomalies. So that's telling us, I think logically what you'd assume is the same amount of workers doing more work, people working more overtime, more hours. And when that's the case, and when we have whatever payroll count we have, that just means that if people were working a more normal work week, we would actually be creating more jobs than we are creating. So it was a stealth sort of bond bearish message inside the jobs report there, one that probably didn't stand in the way too much of yields rising. Plus, traders were worried about this week's auction cycle and also the technical landscape. We were supposed to continue higher in yields until we hit the top of these railroad tracks that have been guiding highs and lows in bond yields for the past 7 months or so. And we might be sort of bouncing at the top of that trend here, either today, tomorrow, or ideally a big bounce on Wednesday coinciding with the 10-year auction would really be great, because it would send a strong message about solidifying that ceiling and moving back toward the lower end of that trend channel. But keep in mind, it is a rising rate environment. That's what you want to plan on. You want to be more defensive than normal until and unless the market gives you a reason to be otherwise, with a nice big break back below 1% in 10-year yields. And honestly, if that happens, it probably wouldn't be for reasons that the society would really love. So can't go wrong hoping for either outcome here, in my opinion.
Matt Graham, founder and CEO of MBS Live. Appreciate you being here with the market update. We could talk on and on, but we've got a podcast we got to do, bud. Good to have you here. Let's get over to Alice Alvey. She is CAB Vice President of Education Training at the amazing organization, Union Home Mortgage. God, Bill Cosgrove agreed to come on in March as a guest, Alice. I'm so excited to have your boss come on, and we're going to be talking about some exciting things, things you guys are doing really, really well, and he's going to come on and share a little bit of the amazing Union Home story. So I'm looking forward to that interview. It's good to have you with us each and every week. How are you doing, Alice?
I'm great. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to sharing all of that Union Home has done with our audience, so that the more people we can help get into the mortgage industry, the better off we all are. There's some great young talent out there.
We need to get that talent, badly need to get that talent. That's what we're going to be dedicating the month of March to, is how do we get that talent in here? How do we build strong companies and strong teams? It's all about recruiting. What are the tools we could use? But you have today, we're talking about the legislative update. What you got for us?
Yeah, so I just wanted to give everyone a little bit of background on the consumer access to financial records. It was an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. The CFPB has been talking about this. Believe it or not, this is still a piece left over from Dodd-Frank. Remember that original 1,800 pages that we all had to digest, and then there became 10,000 pages after that? Yeah, there's still Section 1033 of DFA that is related to really getting to the bottom of how much access we should be giving consumers, meaning we really should be making sure that they have full access to all of their data. And if you think about all the data that is exchanged through scraping and APIs, we have consumers, whenever they go on any type of a website, there's this idea, you have times where the system is going in and pulling data because the customer has gone in, entered their password, and the system's able to scrape that data and then be able to use it in another application. So a lot of this goes on in all of our automated verification processes that we have today. And so the CFPB really wants this notice of proposal. It's closed now. What I've been doing is going back for everybody here to say, all right, who likes this? Who doesn't? What's on the table? I'm sure Alan in the future can talk a lot about this as we get closer to what might be implemented. But there's a lot of some slight differences of opinion going on, especially when you think of credit unions, for example, right? Any infrastructure that might be put in place or rules around this could really alter the competitive landscape for smaller entities. So MBA in their comments stressed, we have to address that. We have to make sure it's consistent. But really, how does giving all consumers, trying to create a level playing field where a consumer has more control over all of their data that's being taken from them and used elsewhere, when you have a lot of entities, small community banks and credit unions that rely on that face-to-face? And so who owns the data at that point, right? If it's all going into a pool, industry we're all sharing, right? If entity A is a big contributor of the data, do they get a better share? So there's talk of if they're paying a toll to get into the database, depending on how much you contribute, what kind of security has to be placed around this. This is a very, very significant issue that we're going to be watching closely. It's a mix of tech and just how we feel we want this to impact the industry as a whole. So it was interesting to hear Experian chime in. Certainly, they are a big tech company that's already very involved in this technology. So they believe the security is already there and in place, whereas there's other entities commenting going, oh, no, we don't have anywhere near enough in writing for security. We need to get a lot more put in writing so consumers really understand what's at risk here. And then that is a comment that's coming from a lot of other entities. Mm. How many of people actually read the I agree box when you open a website? Who reads that, right? You just go, I agree, because I want to go buy that thing, right? So how do we make it clear to consumers that they understand this and that they're aware of how this will work as it moves forward? So we'd love to maybe get Alan on a future show, and we can talk more about, do consumers really understand the data that's being taken from them every time they get involved on the internet, period, let alone with their financial institutions?
Yeah, I think the brand at FormFree talking about how they have that passport thing where the consumer's constantly in control of the data and they turn it on, but it does get shared at some point. That's a really interesting topic. It has lots of tentacles that can go different places, and especially with this administration, which is probably going to be a little bit more aggressive on the compliance side, it's something we need to be paying attention. So yeah, we'll have to get Alan But we'll have one of those roundtable podcasts we do. That's a good one to center up around down the road.
Yeah, it is. And I think it affects all originators going, well, does it get me more business or not? Well, we love the technology, but we really do need to make sure as companies we're set up to make sure we manage it correctly. So that's my report for today.
Thank you very much for your segment this week. We appreciate you as always. And I will kick off into the technology segment. Thanks everyone for joining us today. A couple great things going on this week. One is we all saw the Super Bowl and all the hype around the commercial. I'll get into some really, really funny ones. First, there were cardboard cutouts that were sold. 30,000 of them were sold for a cool $3 million. They were spread out to help people feel socially distanced, and people even bought them and put their pets on them. And if you look at some of the TV video, you can actually see different people reporting, and you can see a real person sitting next to two dogs and a cat. Really kind of funny. But anyways, they use them to help socially distance people, and it worked out well. I didn't see any amazing commercials. Of course, we had the State Farm guy singing with Drake, which I thought was pretty funny. State Farm always has good commercials. Tony Romo and Skechers, I thought that commercial was a little weird. Tracy Morgan, who definitely one of my favorites. I think he's just always funny. This was the Rocket Mortgage commercial, one of them. He was pretty sure with all different kinds of things that you could be pretty sure about. But then he said, pretty sure is not enough, and you need to be certain. And Rocket technology can be certain, and let's be certain. A couple other funny commercials there, of course, was a mortgage broker that we talked about, the mortgage broker platform that they now have with Rocket Technologies. Edward Scissorhands was driving on autonomous Cadillac. And then another mortgage commercial, Guaranteed Rate. Great commercial. It talked a lot about people that believe in a dream and they work hard and conquer that dream. You can make it happen. At the end, they said, you can conquer, and if you believe, you will. Great commercial. It was all around the theme of homeownership and guaranteed rate. And now on to mortgage-specific news. So a couple things going on. David and I have talked quite a bit about different companies or VC or equity capital that is making its way into our industry. And that's what I have in some of today's update. One is there's a Series C, $88 million by Built Technologies. They're looking to expand their suite of products. For those of you that don't know Built, they're construction, finance, software, and payment technology. And they're looking to continue to expand as well to more bank and non-bank lenders. By the way, that was an $88 million Series C. They had a Series B for $31 million for $137 million total. So very good to the guys and the folks and the ladies over at Built Technologies. Another one that I thought was kind of interesting is on servicing. This is a company called Vallon. They say that they're the smartest mortgage on your block, and they're the most human servicing experience. They just raised $50 million in a Series A, and they're targeting the monopolies out there that are in servicing, and they control over 50% of the servicing market. And Vallon also just got approved by Fannie as a servicer. So if you don't know Vallon, you want to check them out, go for it. Roostify also, Series C, they just raised $32 million, $65 million total. And this round of capital is going to leverage innovation AI and simplify their entire home buying process. They also are going to be expanding their staff. They state in the press release by over 50%. So Alice, you mentioned a moment ago, data, 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 right? In the data we use online. I thought I'd mention when you said that, about 2 years ago, I was working on a project, and that project was working with a company. When you shop at Walgreens, Home Depot, Lowe's, supermarket, they collect a whole bunch of data, and this company offers the data mining of that data. Now, nothing is identifiable, but I could go and say, I'm looking for somebody who works in the financial industry that drives an SUV, that owns a home, and that went to college in the Southeast. And it will literally say, okay, and then in a specific zip code, here's 9,000 people that fit that profile. And you can continue to dive in deeper to those individual profiles of those different people. Everything we do is now collected and tracked and used everywhere. For anyone that's on Facebook, you will have recently seen a post going that you can go into Facebook and turn off the ability for Facebook to get information about what you search on the internet and use that to drive Facebook ads. So it would be a great conversation if we did a roundtable on that, David and Alice. But data is used in everything. It's data mined, and it continues to empower, drive, change, provide highlights, augmented experiences, everything you can imagine as we continue down the road here. And it's getting big in financial services overall in general. So next week, we'll talk about some great stuff. We're going to talk about technical documentation, the curation of knowledge bases, and making sure that your staff, the users of your technology or vendor's technology, has what they need to perform their job every day. That's super important. And then last, just to end on this, we are building a tech community for the technology segment You've heard us say many times, Tech Stack Radio. What we'd like to do is if you have something you want to share on our technology segment, you can reach out to me. It's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. And we also are looking to build comments and feedback within your technology groups, meaning that your developers, the folks that never sometimes see the light of day. So again, you can reach out to myself or David. You have our information. Thanks for listening and looking forward to the Hot Topic segment. David, take it away.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Allen. Thanks so much. Good job on that. I appreciate it very much. Folks, I want to say a special thank you to all of our regular guests here. And again, for those of you listening live, just stay right here. We're going to flow right into the Hot Topic segment. For those that are listening on a download basis, just check out the next podcast. Folks, good to have you with us. Today's Lickin' on Lending Hot Topic is going to be on a very interesting topic, learning about what's going on in digital shifts and home buying journey for many consumers out there. We have joining us today, Todd Jordan, who's Vice President of Strategy, as well as Justin Bailey, Senior Client Services Manager. Both of these gentlemen are with Bellamy, and we're going to be talking again about the digital shifts we're seeing going on and how to position yourself for success in this shift. I think it's going to be really interesting. Again, we had Dan Putney. We got to some of the results of Finastra's recent study. We're going to dive in it now. But before we go into this, I want to get Dominic Manella from Support Link 3 to join us and give us a little more insights to why they have partnered up with Bellamy. So without further ado, Dominic, what you got for us?
At Support Link 3, we're passionate about keeping our partners and our clients up to speed on what's going on out in the marketplace. To that end, a few months ago, we partnered with the full-service market intelligence firm Bellamy, and we teamed up to give mortgage lenders a sense of the home buying climate amidst the pandemic and afterwards. We armed them with questions that were inspired by our mortgage banking experts, and Bellamy went out and surveyed more than 1,000 members of a proprietary panel that they've been keeping a pulse on since March. Their research showed not only who's struggling, but also how shifting preferences in a key demographic create an invaluable opportunity for mortgage lending companies, at least the ones who are willing to adapt.
Very good. Excellent job. So, gentlemen, we're so excited to have both of you on. Todd, Justin, welcome. Good to have you on the podcast. Appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks so much for having us. Yeah, first, I just want to start off by introducing our company a little bit about Bellamy. We're a top 50 market intelligence and insights firm specializing in a number of key verticals, including financial services, of course, but also retail, utilities, and consumer packaged goods. And we help our clients answer their toughest business questions, providing solutions that are grounded in consumer research and analytics. And one of the ways we do this is, as Dominic mentioned, by collecting feedback through our proprietary panel of over 2,500 consumers across the U.S.
Yeah.
Having a panel like this means that we have consumers at the ready to reliably share their thoughts and opinions. And we collect those opinions through qualitative means like IDIs or in-depth interviews and focus groups, all done digitally these days, and quantitative techniques like you had mentioned, surveys, and we do a lot of those online as well. So back in March, when the pandemic really started affecting the United States, we saw immediately that regardless of how long it lasted, it was going to change consumer behaviors and perceptions.
Yeah, that's right. And let me just jump in here too. And really since then, we've been reaching out to our panelists every month. So this has been something we've done each month since March to be able to better understand exactly how the pandemic is going to change consumer behavior. This is kind of what Dominic was alluding to. But one thing I'll say is that it's been very interesting because it's allowed us to develop these profiles or segments of different types of consumers during the pandemic. And it really is nice because it played out on a continuum from the person that's, I'm not doing anything different. I still go out to eat. I congregate with my family. This isn't affecting me at all. To the other end, which is I'm extremely cautious. I haven't left my house since March. And I know you probably know people on both ends of that continuum and everybody in between. Yeah. So this has really given us an opportunity to ask about different consumer behaviors each month. And for example, one month we asked about banking, another about retail shopping, and then more recently about buying or refinancing a home during the pandemic. And that's kind of how we got here. So the results of that research then provided a glimpse of what recent home buyers and refinancers have been experiencing, which was a good experience or did they have a difficulty? And then also kind of what was their comfort level with different types of communication that was integral to the mortgage process. So that's how we came about this.
I can't wait to learn more. I'm a data geek. I love data. Now, why would someone with a sanguine, outgoing personality like me love data? Well, I've been in the mortgage industry long enough, but that's why I love Matt Graham's MBS live screen, because it's loaded with data. And I'm really looking forward to getting your insight. But how did this research come about?
Well, like I said, we had the tracker that we'd been doing, and we thought it was a great way to tap into these changes in behavior over the last few months since the pandemic began, because we know things are changing. And so what we saw and some of these impacts that we saw with the pandemic is that this is kind of things that have been happening prior to the pandemic, right? But they've now been accelerated, and that they're almost expected for a satisfactory experience. So really what's happening is the table stakes have shifted, so to speak. And we can now say that if you don't have a smooth digital experience, then you're probably not meeting expectations of your home buyers, especially those who we call Gen Y and Z, which we define as 38 years of age or under. So we don't need to tell you this group will soon comprise the majority of the home buying market. So understanding their perceptions is really important. But really, there was two key impacts, and I'll go into these. One, the home buying experience is going digital, at least for some, and I don't think that's a big surprise. But what is interesting with that is that we looked at each touch point along this home buying journey, Dave, and found out from the start of when somebody's doing their initial research all the way to the end, when they're kind of already through the process, they've already closed or signed the papers, what happens after that? So along each point in that process, what is their preference for communication? Do they want to do this in person or do they want to do this through some digital method? And so what we're seeing is, especially with Gen Y and Z, this greater preference for digital communication method. And that's really critical, as I said, because they're your buyers of today and tomorrow. So they prefer a variety of methods to communicate too. So they really want options. Some of them want email. Some prefer video chat, and some are really just comfortable with that in person again. So it's really not a one-size-fits-all solution, which really makes it challenging as you try to develop a strategy or an approach to how to keep people happy and customers satisfied. So you have to ask, what do your clients prefer? What does their home buying journey look like? And really, is this the same for your prospects or your aspirational clients? I mean, how do they feel about things? So you have a lot to consider, right? And so whatever their preference is, the key is really to be prepared and try to be proactive in meeting them on their demand. So one thing I'll say is that we're not doing a great job of that in the industry, because nearly half of those who were Gen Y or Z noted that they had difficulty during their home buying or refinancing journey since the pandemic began. So you can speculate about why this might be. I mean, there was probably a lot more emails that were coming in through the customer service channels, and or maybe it was the inability to communicate digitally, or maybe a combination of all those different factors. So that's one impact. So let me just say the second one was that there was one point in the process where people still prefer in person, even among the younger group, and that was at the closing. So this could be more due to the assumption that there is no digital closing option, which is still true in some places. But I think as this becomes more common and you have the remote online notary that you can open up to people and give them that opportunity, that this is going to change. The reason I say that, nearly 60% of respondents, which is a pretty large majority these days for anything, nearly 60% said that they would opt in for a completely contactless loan experience if given the choice. And so that number was even higher. It was like 2/3 among Gen Y and Z. So you're really seeing people who, given that option, I'd go contactless. I didn't know I could do that closing process like that. So, I mean, it's throughout that process really of understanding at what point you want to meet them digitally.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Alice, I want to get you in on the conversation right now. You study, Alice, a lot of this, and you have so many millennials and Gen Zers working at your company.
Well, welcome. And it all sounds really interesting. So how can lenders equip themselves for success in the future with the younger generation? How does this all play in with that?
That's a great question. When thinking about the customer experience, it's really important to understand each of those touch points that you're having with your customer, whether that's in person, digitally, through marketing or communications. And with all of those touch points, you really have an opportunity to win or lose. So understanding where the gaps are between that customer expectation and your offering is really crucial. And secondly, knowing how important the digital experience is, making that experience not only as strong as the in-person experience, but cohesive with your brand as well. And so it meets all of your customers' needs. It's really important as well. So if you have a digital solution in place, but it doesn't carry the branded experience your customers is accustomed to, it could have a negative effect. And then third, and this is really important, when thinking about the digital path that a customer can take, it's important to recognize that they're not comparing that digital experience to other mortgage lenders or even other financial institutions. You know, they're comparing you to all of their digital experiences, whether that's on Amazon or Google, and yes, their bank too. But we know that this is true across all categories, that frustrating your customer when they're in that digital experience will most likely lead to them going elsewhere. So to answer your question, the best way to equip yourself during this digital acceleration is to develop a process to consistently measure customer sentiment, and your customers will easily be able to tell you where you're falling short.
That's really interesting. Alan, let's get you in on this. This is kind of down the lines of technology and some of the things going on.
Yeah, well, nice to have you guys. I mean, I've played with some market intelligence stuff in the past, by no means anything close to anything more than an early riser and trying to understand how it works. But I did get some good details and information out of it. And what I learned quickly is you have to have the right team behind you. So maybe that's just something you can talk about, right? Market intelligence is important. We think we know, but we don't know. We try and build for the consumer. We try and build for our partners, but there's a lot of times we overbuild and overestimate what people want. So maybe just talk a little bit about some of the process.
Yeah. So I think you made a great point. I think everybody's different, and we talk about a lot with our clients about customer journeys, and every customer has a different journey, so they go down this path differently. And if you really think about it as the journey from start to finish and how you can get them on board at the beginning, that's going to set you aside from your competitors, right? And that's where we come in. We can really help you understand that customer journey, how they want to approach each touch point, their level of comfort at each one. So what decisions are they making and how did they get there? So what I can say and what we do know is the preferences are shifting for most groups. Comfort using digital forms of communication is on the rise. And we don't think people are going to go back to the way it was before the pandemic is over. Many of these behaviors are here to stay because consumers are now realizing that these things make their lives easier. And one good example that I always like to talk about is check depositing. So this is something that the most banks now offer through their mobile app, and it's very easy to do. However, people were not using that feature on their apps until they were kind of forced to when branches started closing down or people didn't want to go out. Then they tried it because they'd get a check and they wanted to deposit it. And what we found out was our research shows that those who tried it found that it was easy, and almost all of them don't plan to go back to the branch to cash checks anymore. It doesn't make sense for them to do because it's so easy. And I think you see this across all industries, not just at the banks, but you can talk about car buying. We can talk about other things too.
Mm-hmm.
So what's important is that your customer, that you cater to them, I mean, really know them. Don't just assume them. And this is the kind of the point you were making with what you're saying. And that's really where this strategic research approach comes in. So the key to giving your customers options and providing a great customer experience is what sets you apart. And we call this our omni-channel approach. So if you have a customer service via phone, then have responsive, helpful phone operators. If you have a live chat feature on your website, provide fast and useful feedback from a live person. So really the key to an incredible customer experience is testing and learning your customer needs.
That's right. I agree. And since there's no one-size-fits-all approach, we're always recommending an omni-channel approach. And by omni-channel, I simply mean the purchase dynamic in which customers are seeing and learning and interacting with your brand through multiple channels, including digital. In almost every market, we see growing behavior that includes e-commerce in purchase decisions. And further, we see kind of this ping-ponging behavior in which people start a process online and then back to a traditional channel and so on. And the pandemic really has just accelerated this behavior. A good example is in the grocery sector. So grocery stores have seen a 30% jump in sales since the pandemic hit, and many were not ready for not only the lift in sales in the face of a pandemic, but the intense need for curbside pickup and delivery and growing interest in the digital channel. So those slow to the game saw portions of their opportunity going to third parties like Instacart and Shipt. And what we're doing for our clients is providing them we call UX research or user experience research, in which we're literally talking to consumers and having them go through that digital experience online and giving our clients the opportunity to understand through their eyes how they're experiencing things digitally.
I want to get into how lenders are equipping themselves. One thing you alluded to or stated that it's going to be interesting if consumers really do want that personal touch. We've been seeing that show up in different surveys over and over. The consumer, even the millennial, the Gen Zers, the latest crowd jumping into home ownership, they don't want to talk to people early on, but they do want to when it comes to closing, or so we thought. And that's because of they have to go in and talk to someone at the end. And it is the biggest transaction. Maybe they'll continue that trend. Fascinating thing about what digital closings will do to that. And I suspect it's going to further impact the next generation of homebuyers to not be less inclined to have the in-person contact. So I think we may see some surveys change on that. But real quickly, how do lenders equip themselves for success in the future?
Well, I think, again, we can really kind of look at the voice of your customers. Change is happening. We know that. Younger generations are rapidly moving to digital communication. So this is not just stereotyping or generalizing about a group of up-and-coming consumers, right? I mean, we like to do that with millennials, but our data shows the preferences are shifting, and they're not just in mortgage lending, but in banking, commerce, everywhere. Mm. So you can name it. And really, you can choose to accelerate ahead of the digital transformation, or you can kind of stay in the slow lane and maintain the status quo. Again, we're already seeing some things that point to this dissatisfaction that's potentially worrisome among consumers. Half of Gen YZ who took out a home and refinanced the loan since the pandemic said it was an extremely difficult process for them. So half said it was extremely difficult since the pandemic has begun. And it really impacted their lender's ability to assist them. So, and it's not just generational, that's some of it, but 2.5 times more lenders who financed their mortgage from a bank found it incredibly hard to find the right option compared to those who use a mortgage company. So you can see the pain points in some areas as the pandemic forced this digital shift. And there's really this bigger issue that's arising. So questions remain, such as what led to this difficult process experienced by half of the younger homebuyers? Why did those who financed through the bank struggle more? I think these are kind of the things we have to get to the bottom of. And you probably have some hypotheses. You probably heard from customers about this. But I think really digging in and doing the research the proper way would open some new doors of understanding for you. So you need to kind of identify your audience's home buying journey, determine whether you're meeting the needs or leaving them on the table. And I think that's kind of what we're going for here. So that opportunity to succeed or fail at every touch point, going back to those touch points we were talking about. So, and then lastly, you may have some reticence about the costs here or the investment that this would take to do this. And there are some of those, I'm sure, but switching to digital in the long run, it's less expensive to implement digital solutions. So there's automation involved.
Oh, absolutely.
If you have a call center staff, you don't have that. So investing in a solid digital transition is very well worth it. So our digital experience team specializes in helping with that type of transition. We'd be happy to help with it.
Well, and I want to get into how people can take advantage of your company, get their own specific market intelligence data. You are doing it for other verticals. I'm looking at questions that are coming in from our listeners, and we get them texted into me. If you want to text in your question, text to 512-632-2900. One of the questions coming in is, I'd love to have some surveys of my past customers that I've done business with, especially certain segmentations. Do you do that? And is it cost prohibitive for a smaller company? It sounds like they're saying they're a smaller company. What would you say to someone who wants to get market intelligence on at least the customers they've been working with to see what trends they have related to their business?
Sure, I can take this, Justin. We do a lot of work with companies that are trying to reach out to former defectors, we refer to them as, to find out what happened in that process. And while we do conduct surveys, that's sometimes the appropriate tool, but we're highly consultative, so we want to make sure we understand clearly the needs of our clients so we can advise the right method. And as far as smaller or larger companies, we do work with a lot of large organizations, but there are techniques that can be employed that are not cost prohibitive, I think, for small and medium-sized companies. And so a recommendation would be to get in touch and we can talk about what those opportunities look like.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to get to a couple more questions that are just rolling in here real quickly. I think one of the suggestions are for smaller players that may not be able to afford having you guys come is work with one of the other vendors that might also be able to have that information shared. So you may not have exclusive information on just your customers, but you can work with MI companies, credit reporting companies, others that may want to be doing this. So take this information, share this podcast with them so that they too learn about this and specifically Bellamy and how they can help get information about your market. I think you can get someone, a vendor, MI companies, credit reporting companies, title insurance companies, all to want to be invest in the survey. So don't think that you're a little boxed out just because you may be too small. A lot goes into this. One of the questions coming in, really interested in data. I love data. Lincoln, you're not the only sanguine personality. What is the cost to do a survey of this nature? Is it based on the scope? What are some of the drivers on determining the cost for that? If you got the right answer here for this guy.
I would say for all of you data hounds, just really quickly, that the DAC that all this information came from that we've been speaking about is available. So there's some information for you that is free, some detailed information about what we're seeing, particularly with regards to this purchase process in lending. And you can get that at bellamy.com. That's bellomy.com/lending. And that will take you directly to some information that will help all of you in a broad sense. And as far as it would be not right of me to try to quote something over the line right here, but I'd be happy to talk to anyone independently and we can talk about sort of what a typical research project might cost.
Yeah, one of the other questions is if we have you do a proprietary survey on our behalf, does the data remain exclusively ours or do you share that with others?
No, all of the data that we collect for our client remains completely confidential. The information that you have access to is work that we did in conjunction with SL3 and have agreed to make that public information. But no, absolutely, because that information is exclusively yours and your particular customers are going to be very different than another organization's customers about their impressions of you. So yeah, absolutely, that is confidential and would remain yours only.
If we were to reach out to those who aren't customers, the same thing. We have methods of finding those people and that would be confidential as well.
Well, I think just waking people up that you don't have to be this monstrous company or you have to depend on someone else for market intelligence data. You wanted to know, listener, what's going on with your market and you can get these guys to come and work with you. I mean, another thing I would strongly suggest is get a hold of Dominic at SupportLink3, SL3, and you'll be able to get a hold of connect with Dominic. He can help guide you through this. Dominic was instrumental in working with the folks at Bellamy, but specifically working with Todd and Justin on designing a survey so they got the result they want. So I was really impressed with what you did with that group. It's fantastic that you already have 2,500 consumers that you're in connection with. So it's just us designing the questions is really what it's about. So I'm impressed.
Absolutely.
Lots of questions come rolling in. This has generated some interest here. It's very exciting what they can do. So I'm thrilled that they introduced you to me. And Todd and Justin, I want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And how can people learn more again? You mentioned the website. Is there any other way that they can get a hold of you that you'd recommend?
Yeah, that's the easiest way. Go to bellamy.com, bellomy.com. And there are lots of ways to reach out to us right there. And lots of great information. There's also some blogs and other information that I think you'll find interesting.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate you being here with us. Great information. Love the topic of market intelligence. So excellent. There's great stuff here. Thank you. Have a great week. Look forward to seeing what comes of this. I'd love to have you back. So if you're doing another survey and you want to let us know about it, we'd love to have you back and share that into market intelligence with our customers. I just got another email from Lender One members who's really getting into studying digital marketing strategies. So anything you guys can do surveys down that line that you want to bring back to us, there's a real need. Love to get you back on and talk about that. Appreciate you being here now. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. We've had as our guest Todd Jordan, Vice President of Strategy, and Justin Bailey, Senior Client Services Manager of Bellamy. Go check out their services. Love market intelligence. Next week, we've got Lodestar Software Solutions, the CEO, Jim Paulino, coming in to be with us and talking about what Lodestar is doing. He's also going to be talking about some market trends. So I also want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, Indicom, Accelerate, Mobility, RE, Modex. And you can check out all of our sponsors on our website, LincolnOnLending.com. Thank you, listeners, for being a part of this podcast. We're grateful to have you as our listeners. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.